Committee on Education and General Government. Sorry, we're a little bit late. Let me tell you what we are going to do and what we're not going to do today. We are not going to hear House Bill 3600A. We are going to carry that over one more day. Ooh, I'm rhyming. How cool can that be? There are some folks that are thinking of some amendments, and I think we all need time to think very cautiously about those kinds of amendments. So we will have a hearing and a meeting tomorrow, folks, in Hearing Room B at 3:30. So if you thought this was your last day, it's not. But we will have a hearing on our other issue today, which is an informational hearing. I will open the informational hearing on contracting for special projects in public post-secondary universities. Kind of an interesting title. So we have Chancellor here to talk to us about that.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chancellor, just one moment. And Ms. Richardson, were you able to provide the committee with the newspaper article that I had sent up?
I sent it out.
I got it in my office.
Electronically, Madam Chair, but it's not in your packets at the dais.
Okay.
I apologize.
Okay, great. So we have a news article about happenings over at Eastern Oregon University, so we want to ask you some questions about that. All right, Mr. Chancellor, take it away.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair Walker, members of the committee. For the record, George Pernsteiner of the Oregon University System. And thanks for the opportunity to talk a little bit about what I'm calling special projects in the Chancellor's office. And I want to take this opportunity because I think there's some important work that's being done, and a lot of what we have talked about in this committee and in your House committee counterpart is actually work that's being done by the people on these special projects. As you may recall, about 3.5 years ago, the Board of Higher Ed reduced the Chancellor's staff by about one-third and the budget by more than 20%. And focus the Chancellor's office on policy, advocacy, orchestration of system-wide efforts, and overseeing the financial situation of the system and the campuses. And what that meant, because at the same time, they wanted to take on a whole lot of new initiatives, particularly with respect to educational attainment of Oregonians and connection with community colleges and K-12, was that they said, well, we know that we've reduced the staff significantly, and we want you to then do things with special projects. Now, special projects are efforts that are not expected to be permanent. They're efforts that need further definition and development, and they are typically efforts that are intersector. In other words, they involve both the universities and other segments of public education. The first example of this really was the Oregon Transfer Module, which we talked with you about in 2005 session, which basically said that if you took a certain level curriculum at a community college or at a university, it would transfer en bloc and count towards your general education requirements at any of those other institutions among the 24 publics in the state. Starting in 2005, we began to use campus staff for special projects and efforts. Now, I did this for several reasons. The first is they had expertise and knowledge, which I will freely admit I often do not have. Second, they had connections with the campuses and credibility on the campuses. They also were available to us. We didn't have to go out with an RFP to secure their services, and therefore we could, you know, avail ourselves of talent we knew was there and do it in a timely way, and they were already on contract. They were our employees to begin with. Now, we do pay either to the campuses for them for their time, or we pay them on our payroll, depending upon the situation. Each one is a little bit different. These are limited duration assignments. They are not permanent positions. And we have 5 staff who are currently assigned to and paid by our office to perform specific limited duration efforts in policy and advocacy areas. Some of them are not full-time, some of them are. 2 of those staff are continuing at the same time in their roles on their campuses. So we basically are buying out some of their FTE while they provide talent and expertise in specific areas. One is a tenured faculty member who has delayed his retirement in order to help us on several of these projects. And two are former university presidents with particular contacts and expertise. Many of these are assigned to help with the high school, community college, and university transitions and student progression. And I'm going to go through each of them because you'll see how what they are doing really ties in with most of what I've been talking about with these committees, essentially in the last, I guess, three, if we count this supplemental session, last three sessions. Karen Sprague, who is the Vice Provost for Undergraduate Studies at the University of Oregon, is assigned one-fourth time to us. And her primary focus with us is on the alignment between the community colleges and the universities. She's been involved in revising the Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer and assisting the community colleges in understanding the linkages among the courses at the universities and at the community colleges as we do that. She's also worked on the degree pathways between the community colleges and OUS, particularly in teacher education. She's defined the general education coursework for elementary teachers that now will be offered also at the community colleges. You will recall that from the last session. She has drafted the guide for prospective secondary teachers. She's developed the memorandum of understanding regarding education foundation courses. In other words, what do you, you know, the sort of the fundamental premises of teacher education that are then offered by the community colleges. And one of the important things for me is that she convenes the teacher education faculty from around the state so that they understand licensure requirements and and share best practices. And this happens not just with our public institutions, but also with the independent colleges who train about half the teachers in this state. She has developed the general education outcomes framework for use by community colleges and universities, and had to convene and staff cross-sector work groups at sites throughout the state in order to do that. Let me stop and explain that a little more, because I talked with you about this in the last session. What we're trying to do here is to have a definition of what it means to have completed your general education, generally your first 2 years of a college degree. What skills and knowledge should you have if you have mastered that, you know, curriculum? And what we're trying to do is to develop outcomes that are agreed to by community college faculty and university faculty as to what those things would be. And that's what she's been working on. She's also one of the staff to the Unified Education Enterprise Committee initiatives. Her particular focus is on a dual credit from the high school college. And what they've done there is to look at Oregon practice from around the state, and there are a lot of situations in which community colleges in particular, and some of the universities, offer classes at the high schools, or high school teachers offer classes that count for college credit because the high school teachers are qualified to teach at the college level. And what she's done is gone around the state and looked at all of the practices in Oregon and then compared that with what the national norms are for that. And I'm happy to report we look pretty good.
And Ms. Sprague started working for you on this project when?
On that particular project or generally?
Well, generally about all the projects that you're talking about.
It would have been sometime in 2006.
Okay, and she's of limited duration. She's one-quarter time with you, and mm-hmm. the University of Oregon pays her the rest of her salary.
That's correct.
So how much do you pay her for her one-quarter time? Is that public information?
Yeah, I think it's around, well, she's it'd be around 31,000, I think, would be the quarter time.
Okay, and the position is expected to take how much more time?
My guess is, because I'm about to talk about the alignment of admission requirements with high school diploma standards, that it will probably last beyond this biennium.
Okay.
Because really, the last piece of this is tied to how we interlock the admissions requirements of the universities with those high school exit requirements that are being put in place by the Board of Education right now. And what she's doing is she's working with the Department of Education on two of their task forces, essential skills and assessment of skills, and is working also with our faculty senates on those issues.
Okay.
So she is one person of that group. The second is Bob Turner, and Bob, you may remember, was the president of the Interinstitutional Faculty Senate and worked on the Senate Bill 342 matters. He has been, for about a quarter century, an associate professor of biology at Western, and he is now working with us full-time, and his principal focus is on the connection between the high schools and the universities. And he's staffing the Unified Education Enterprise Committee initiatives on essential skills, on standards and assessment. And in that, he's looking at what does it take to measure college readiness in terms of if you meet the essential skills coming out of high school under the new high school diploma requirements, how do you assess that and then translate that into what it would take to be successful in the first year of college? And he's working on that for us.
And is he another special projects person? Is he one of your five that you currently have?
That's all I'm going to talk about today are those five.
Okay. And then he started working for you when?
I think this past summer.
Okay. And his salary?
He is at, we're going to have to dig that out. Just a minute, okay?
Okay.
He is at $81,000.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And so, and he came from Western Oregon University.
That is correct. And he's a tenured faculty member there.
Okay. Is he still on the faculty there, or you've just borrowed him for a period of time, or what's his status?
He was thinking of retiring, and so we are extending him. I'm presuming that he will work with us until his projects are over. And then he will assess what he will want to do. And I'm not going to speak for what he will then choose to do. I mean, he obviously could go back to Western. He's on the faculty there.
But he's not being paid right now from Western because he's with you.
No, that's correct.
Okay, great.
He's also working on, in addition to trying to figure out how to assess and do that crosswalk between the end of high school and the beginning of college, he's working with our Senates on that as well. He is also participating in the development of a new set of peer institutions for our universities. As you know, every biennium we talk with you about peer campuses, and every about 10 years we go back and assess, are those the right peers? Are those the right comparators for each of our institutions, both in terms of academic program mix, mission, and a variety of other factors? And so he is helping us to develop a new set of peer institutions because we haven't updated that since about 1997, I believe. He's also responsible for developing some of the teacher education initiatives that we hope will help improve the faculty connection with K-12 teachers. We may be having some policy packages before the governor and you in the next session that would flow out of that work. Robert Mercer is the next member. Robert is the Assistant Dean and Chief of Student Advising for the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at Portland State, and he's been in that role for many years. We borrowed him on a full-time basis for the better part of a year, and now he's on a half-time basis as he transitions back to his former role at PSU. He's most concerned about academic credit transfer from high schools and community colleges to OUS. And he's the one who facilitated the standardization of the advanced placement scores and credits, working with all the community colleges and universities. That was implemented this past year. He's now doing something similar with requests to the, with respect to the International Baccalaureate. He's also facilitating a review of and perhaps the first changes to the Oregon Transfer Module since we put it in place 3 years ago. And he's assisting also in developing general education outcomes for community colleges and universities, going back to what Karen was working on, the work that Karen's leading. He also staffs the Joint Boards Articulation Commission, which is a standing commission of the Joint Boards of Education and Higher Education, and he chairs the OUS Residency Council. Those last two functions are ongoing functions that will transition to a permanent staff member once we have a permanent staff member, but he's doing them right now because of his expertise and because he was available. And again, he's half-time.
He's half-time in his salary.
The half-time amount would be about $41,500.
Okay.
These are all alignment efforts that I think involve student advancement among the sectors of public education in Oregon. We have another project that is focused on learning outcomes at the baccalaureate level. And this is led by Elizabeth Zinser, who's the former president and professor of psychology at Southern Oregon University, and she's been engaged in this work at the national level for some time. She's working with the OUS provosts in a task group that represents all seven campuses and all seven faculty senates, and she's drawing on the efforts that are being done in other states. She's guiding the development of a plan to assess key student learning outcomes at the baccalaureate level. In other words, what should you be able to do? What skills should you have? What should you know when you finish a college degree, regardless of what the discipline is? And part of that flows out of discussions that have been held at the national level with employers and others as to what college graduates ought to be able to know and do. Dr. Zinser, under her leadership, has made sure that Oregon is one of three states, with Wisconsin and Virginia, that are involved in this work using a national organization, national funding. And there will be a national conference on this matter that will be held in Eugene later this spring. President Zinser, as part of her halftime assignment, she's halftime with us in total. She also serves as our representative to the Oregon sesquicentennial effort, and she will promote and coordinate the efforts at all seven campuses, engaging faculty, students, and community members to address Oregon's past, present, and future. I asked her to do one thing when she took on that role, and that is to make sure that at each of the campuses we had a somewhat different focus, because you don't want to have the same kind of thing happening everywhere. And so what she's done is to work with each campus so that one of them will focus on history, one on anthropology, one on Native American studies, one on geography, one on geology, one on education, and one on business. And I think it's important to sort of give people the flavor that Oregon has such a broad view of itself, its history, and its future. And so what she's doing is to make sure that each of our campuses has a somewhat different approach that it takes as we enter the sesquicentennial year.
And her salary?
She is at $68,000.
Okay, for half-time work.
All yes.
Right, thank you. And your last one?
For several years, the United States Congress has been grappling with issues related to higher education and national policy in the context of the Higher Education Reauthorization Act, H.R. 4137. This is supposed to happen every 5 years. It actually happens about every 10. So it's a once-in-a-decade opportunity to shape federal policy towards higher education. Both we and the various national associations have tried for many years to get various kinds of language into that bill. I have never been successful. Khosrow Fatemi, who's the former president and professor of business and economics at Eastern Oregon University, has now led efforts to include in that bill a provision that would provide funding to campuses serving rural counties in the United States. That effort has so far been very successful. A new provision, one of the few new provisions, it was included in the bill passed by the House of Representatives a couple of weeks ago. And it's now in a conference committee to add similar language on the Senate side. Although it's not a certainty, Dr. Fatemi was able to work last year with senators to introduce standalone legislation that progressed partway through that chamber that accomplishes the same thing. If enacted, the section or the standalone bill regarding, quote, college and university rural education, unquote, would provide grants to campuses who meet its criteria. At the present time, three OUS institutions, Eastern, Western, and OIT, would qualify for grants of from $200,000 to $500,000 a year. This should help with the efforts that the board, the governor, and the legislature have called for in order to increase the college attendance and completion rates of students in rural Oregon. Of course, Dr. Fatemi continues to work to get the Senate to include the necessary language, and most recently has been enlisting the help of Senator Smith in that regard. In addition, Dr. Fatemi has been charged with developing an economic impact model for the rural campuses of Oregon. The larger Oregon campuses all prepare such studies, and you've seen them, and they show the impact that they have on the state. For several years, our office has had in its work plan, but has not had time or resources to undertake a similar investigation for the smaller institutions. Dr. Fatemi is an economist who is focused on rural development. He's experienced in these studies and has begun to work on developing a model for Oregon's smaller campuses. Unfortunately for him, I also have experience with such models, and he or I are currently working to refine what he has proposed. My hope is that we can undertake the actual modeling either later this year or early at the next academic year. Now, some have called into question my hiring of these staff.
Well, wait a minute. We haven't asked the question of Dr. Bottomy. He works full-time?
Yes, he does.
And his salary?
$192.
Okay. Now, you can conclude.
Thank you. As I say, there have been questions raised about my hiring of these staff. I wish that I had even 1% of the talent, the passion, and the expertise of any one of them. They are the engines that are helping to move Oregon's higher education agenda. Karen Sprague has a stellar record as a researcher and a teacher at the University of Oregon, and has led efforts to redesign freshman programs at the U of O to enhance student success. She has taken her knowledge of how students learn and how the university works to the faculty and administrators of the community colleges, all for the benefit and success of Oregon students. Bob Turner has for a quarter of a century been a highly respected faculty member at Western Oregon University, and he should be well known to you for the work and the passion he brought in the Senate Bill 342 discussions a couple sessions ago. He is committed to student success, and his connections with faculty around the system are critical to the work of linking the new high school diploma standards with college admissions. This work does not happen by fiat. This work happens because people work on it with people they know and trust, and that is Bob's role. Robert Mercer is the most dedicated and effective student advisor I have ever known. He has helped more students earn degrees than just about anyone else in the history of this state, and he takes time each and every day to help individual students solve individual problems. Elizabeth Zinsser was one of the first higher education leaders in America to recognize that we in higher education need to assess what our students have learned, tied to what employers and others are saying about what is needed in the workplace and in life. That is why, when Elizabeth chose to step down as president at Southern, I was eager to engage her in our efforts to assess student learning. She is the principal reason why Oregon is among the states moving to the forefront of this important area. Now, there have been questions about the contract that I've offered to the Hospital Fatemi. Yes, as president, Dr. Fatemi was not a good fit last year at Eastern Oregon University. He tried, unsuccessfully as it turned out, to address several of the issues that I had identified when he and I had discussed things over the course of a year. The results were not positive. Dr. Fatemi was a tenured member of the faculty and had another year to go on his presidential contract, and I made a decision. And I decided that there was other work that Dr. Fatemi could perform that would be of benefit to Oregon. Hosro Fatemi came to Oregon after a highly successful career as a teacher, as a researcher, and as an authority on college success for underserved populations in rural areas. He did not lose those skills, and his success so far at the national level is proof of that. I recall that Harry Truman did not enjoy very much success as a retailer, and that Albert Einstein was not the best patent examiner in Vienna. But that did not mean they were unfit for other work, work at which I would argue they excelled. Yes, as I said before, I wish I had even 1% of the talent and the ability of any one of these five people, but I don't. So I try to match their skills with the work that needs to be done for Oregon, and then I try to get out of their way. I think the results so far, we have made greater progress in connecting with community colleges and K-12 in the last 3 years than in probably the previous 30. I think those results speak for themselves, and I think the future will bring even greater success. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Okay, so I have a series of questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is in response to your testimony where you said that you began hiring these special projects folks beginning in 2005. When did you come on board as chancellor?
2004.
Okay. So you were here a year. You decided you needed special projects. What had been done prior to this time, and why did you think these people needed to be hired for these things?
Chair Walker, prior to that time, the chancellor's office had about 30% more staff. And so part of it was in order to... The board, at the same time as they reduced the staff, said, we want all of these new initiatives as well. And so we had a disconnect between the then current staffing levels and the workload that had been anticipated. So we were going to bring new people in. And that had been part of the board's intent in the beginning. They had said this is the way that we would deal with those kinds of issues.
So I do recall that now, because there were a lot of folks very unhappy with the reduction in staff in the chancellor's office. And so I'm wondering, based on these five special projects people, and you're sure paying Dr. Fadimi a whole lot of money, it's very funny how it translates the same salary as making at Eastern Oregon. And we'll get to that in a minute. But if you add up all the salary of these special projects people, are you anywhere near where you were before when you had all that staff?
Chair Walker, no. Okay. I mean, there was a several million-dollar reduction in the annual budget.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, so let me ask this. How is the salary determined for these people who are doing special projects?
Chair Walker, members of the committee, in each case, going one at a time, In cases where we are bringing people from a campus, we typically keep them at their current salary, and then we may choose to give them a supplement slightly above where they had been on the campus. And so in the case of Vice Provost Sprague, her salary is set by the U of O, and we just pay 25% of whatever that is. With respect to Robert Mercer, we pay 50% of his PSU salary. Mm-hmm. With respect to Bob Turner, when he came over to our staff, we took what he was making as a faculty member, which is a 9-month contract, translated it into a 12-month contract, and that's how we got the number.
Okay. Now, tell me about the two former presidents.
With regard to former President Zinser, she and I negotiated that rate. Her presidential rate was somewhat higher than that. But you know, she and I did reach agreement on that amount. And she was in the process of resigning. I don't say retiring, because she's actually still working. So she was in the process of resigning from Southern and was looking around, what do I do next? And so we basically negotiated an agreement. Mm-hmm. Because she was really one of the few people in the country at that time who was looking at learning outcomes in any kind of a meaningful way. And because of that, and because of the connections she had nationwide in that, it was a godsend to us, because mm-hmm. that was an area we knew we had to get into. With regard to President Fadimi, this was his salary as president, and we were obligated under his current contract to pay him that for another year, so I did not change the salary amount.
Okay, so if you had not agreed to take him on and pay him through the university system, who would have bought out his contract?
Chair Walker, it is conceivable he would still be at Eastern as the president. You know, I don't know what would have happened.
Yeah, well, I'm just... The reason I'm asking all these questions, as you can well imagine, is people on that side of the mountain are pretty upset about this. And people in Southern Oregon were pretty upset about Dr. Zinser, too. I'm assuming she's a doctor. Because that institution was in the red. And Eastern Oregon University is in the red. And, in fact, they're eliminating 18 full-time jobs the last time I looked. And yet he still is getting his $192,000 salary. Is he also getting a housing allowance?
No. Or,
okay, so his salary is his only benefit other than just health care and that sort of thing. And you yes. nodded. Okay. So I have trouble with that. And as you know, last legislative session, we passed a bill here on golden parachutes for school administrators who don't work out for whatever reason, and they leave the district. They cannot get payment for work they don't perform. So I'm just wondering why. I guess Dr. Fadimi is getting paid for work he's performing because he's performing some work, but it's a whole lot of money. And you can understand the sensitivity of that.
Chair Walker, I understand the sensitivity of it. I'm also looking at two elements. One is, are we getting value? And I would argue we're getting value. Frankly, he's had a lot more success in D.C. than I've ever had. And secondly, I suppose that doesn't say too much, does it? Actually, it does. But secondly, we did have a contract with him, and we are honoring that contract.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Hass.
Thank you. I come at this a little bit with a bias, and that is I think the state has underfunded higher education going on 20 years now, and so you have a tough job. But when I look at, think sometimes people and things just don't work out. And if you had a three-year contract, and Senator Metzger will relate to this, it reminds me of anchor salaries, and the anchor doesn't get the ratings or just doesn't work out, but he's still under contract. You can't. That's why you have a contract. And that's why people like the president or anchorman or whoever sign contracts. And to buy him out of that contract or to pay him for the rest of it is part of the deal. That's not a golden parachute. They're two separate things. The state is just living up to the deal it struck with this person. It didn't work out. And that's totally different than a golden parachute where you see CEOs from Home Depot or wherever making an extra $60 million when they leave. I don't know what the chancellor or the state could have done in this case. You can't just fire someone after 2 years of a three-year deal or a month or 2 years and 11 months and say, get out of here, we're not going to pay you the rest. I mean, that's just pretty basic. So I don't know what we're really asking to do. I mean, sometimes things just don't work out.
I think, Senator, what we're doing here is asking the chancellor to explain the folks that they hire on special projects and what they are. Where they come from, what service they provide, and what dollar value that service is. And there are folks who were upset about Dr. Fadimi's tenure at Eastern Oregon, and I think they deserve to have this issue heard in state government, and I know they're listening on the Internet because I got an email from one of those persons this morning. And so I think they just need an understanding of how it works. I'm not saying there's anything underhanded here. I'm just saying I want some transparency so that Oregonians know what they're getting for the money.
Fair enough. I just see this as different than the Bend Canada deal or the Portland superintendent's deal.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Just a curiosity, you say that he's accomplished a lot more in D.C. than you did. What has he accomplished?
He's actually, Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, he's managed to get something into the Higher Education Reauthorization Act, which I find to be an amazing accomplishment. I know how difficult it is to do.
Well,
that.
I know. I'm amazed if we were able to get something, but so. He has got, is it a rural university piece or?
Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, yes it is. It's funding for universities in rural areas who serve first generation and other kinds of students. And it depends upon where you are and who you serve, whether or not you qualify. And at the moment, according to Dr. Fadimi, three Oregon universities qualify right now, and there aren't that many in the nation who actually meet the qualification. So I think we're looking forward to, assuming that the budget passes, which is another thing at the federal level, We're looking forward to having opportunity then to have some funding for some of these initiatives to help students in rural Oregon succeed in college, which is really what we've tried to do.
So this provision has survived all the markups so far?
So far.
Find some wood. I'm not sure we have that real wood. But yeah, and as as the Chancellor testified, if this is successful, it will bring between $200,000 and $500,000 a year in grants to Eastern, Western, and OIT, correct? Did I get that correct?
Chair Walker, that's my understanding, yes.
Okay. My note-taking is still pretty impeccable. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chancellor, for the overview. I would echo a couple of things that my colleague from Beaverton has pointed out in terms of providing resources, which this committee has been very dedicated to in the last couple of sessions in particular, both at the university level, the K-12, you know, that's almost all of our deliberations of how we provide more opportunities and the resources to make those happen. And your organization certainly is not alone in those that in the early parts of the decade were cut back and cut back severely. And we all know what it's like to continue to have requests to do things without having the troops available in order to initiate the effort. So I would say just on the surface, you're looking at finding people in certain skill levels that are available, and to provide those services is certainly meritorious. Certainly, as the chair has pointed out, and I understand this, I think we all do, and for those who are listening, I would hope they would understand as well, is that when we are very close to a situation where we have a leadership position or others that we're working with, I certainly know this from sports and covering sports a long time, they love you when you're winning, and they can't wait for you to get out the door and make sure it doesn't hit you on the backside when you're losing. And things can change very quickly. And whether you're a fan of an athletic team or you're an engrossed faculty member who's very committed to a university or a student member of that, and you see you're losing programs or you don't believe the management as well, then it's not enough in your mind to have this person leave, even if their efforts were good but just misguided, or if they were certainly not qualified or whatever the case may have been. I think it's almost human nature that some people want to, you know, get that pound of flesh with it, you know, rather than realize it was, you know, the decision, you know, was a bad one and we need to move on. They want some extraction of something. And as Senator Haas pointed out, the contractual obligation you have to pay. And certainly we have seen examples where if someone in this particular case has a year left on a contract that we are obligated to pay for, people aren't going to move and take places in Eastern Oregon from wherever or any place else without due diligence on their part and some guarantee that we're going to provide funding, just like a business would do. If a CEO is going to leave, is going to negotiate something that makes it worthwhile and some confidence that the board is going to give them the opportunity to do that. And we often hear about how we need to run government like a business. Well, that's how business runs. But certainly in this particular case, I could certainly see what would happen had you called Mr. Fatimi in and said, you got a year left in your contract, but I think it's better you leave, and we'll pay you off the contract and send you off somewhere else. Then certainly the criticism would be that we're paying somebody for doing nothing. So the fact that, in your judgment, you found a responsible project with a person that you believe in that particular area could be helpful, and certainly what you've testified today, you're pleased with the direction. I think in a very negative situation that has developed at the university to the best possible situation, you found what you believe is a good outcome. I think that the, you know, for those, and Senator Walker, when we were in Southern Oregon and we talked about some of those issues with students there in which they had difficulty because of the economic situation that a lot of rural small universities face, they face the same thing. Obviously, there's a heartburn when things just aren't going the way you want them to go. And in the leadership positions, whether it's Southern Oregon or whether it's Eastern Oregon, I think certainly from your position, and I'm sure you would agree with this, that if we put people in the wrong position that aren't really the people that can actually do what we want to accomplish, that happens. if it happens repeatedly, you know, then people come to you, and rightfully so, feel, you know, there's a sense of accountability that the chancellor has or the responsibility that the legislature has in making, you know, repeated decisions that are poor decisions. I think that's where the real responsibility would lie, as opposed to having a situation that does not work out well and then trying to make the best out of it under the legal obligations you have. So it's a disappointing situation in Eastern Oregon. It's good to see that maybe that's turning the corner a little bit. Certainly hope that the new direction is going to be a very positive one. But the fact of the matter is we all make mistakes. The question is, how do we take care of that situation at the time, and how do we try not to duplicate that in the future? Because then we do all have to be held accountable if we repeat those mistakes over and over again. So I know that's not a question, it's a commentary, but I would share the same concerns that everyone else has, but this is a decision that has to be honored, and I think what we do now and where all of our focus should be is making sure we don't duplicate the mistakes going forward.
Well, Senator, I appreciate your comments, because let me read to you from the Ben Bulletin story that James Sinks wrote that you all have a copy of. And Mr. Chancellor, you correct me if anything is inaccurate, because the media does make mistakes. It says, Fatemi 63 resigned from the college's top post in July after a controversial three-year run that included a faculty no-confidence vote and a level of spending that shrunk the school's reserves from 14.4% to less than 3% of its annual revenue. The state says campuses should maintain reserves of at least 5%. Ignoring state projections of faltering enrollment and resulting funding cuts, Fatemi hired new administrators, doled out additional scholarships, and spent $65,000 to remodel a former fish biology lab into a new president's suite, end quote. Is any of that inaccurate, Mr. Chancellor?
Senator Walker, there are some things that are beyond my knowledge, but nothing in there seemed inaccurate.
Okay. So it's a little bit more than not being quite a perfect fit. Which is of concern to me, because one of the things that you indicate in your testimony is that he's an economist and he's developing a model for rural campuses, an economic impact model. And I am concerned that Dr. Fatemi is on this task when he doesn't seem to have known how to manage his own university. Be that as it may, what my colleagues have indicated is probably true. It wasn't a good fit in many ways, and you have to make the best of a bad situation. But you can understand why the residents in the community that surrounds Eastern Oregon University are upset about someone who continues to live on a 164-acre piece of property in a 9,000-square-foot home and making the same salary. Well, they see the cuts in their university. So that's the rub for Oregonians. And, you know, what I'm trying to do here is to let them know what these special projects are for, where their money is being spent, and let them make the decision, an informed decision about whether it was a wise choice or not. So that really wasn't a question, it was a statement. Senator Morse, you've been quiet. Did you have any questions?
No, I don't, but thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any questions down here? Mr. Chancellor, I'm satisfied with the special projects idea, because I know your budget was whacked pretty considerably, and you do provide some services to the campuses. So, I'm not all that alarmed by some of these projects and some of these salaries. They seem somewhat reasonable, though I have to tell you the two former university presidents that one's just a little uncomfortable. But they seem to be providing services that we've asked you to provide. I know that this legislature has put more emphasis on higher education and the integration of K-12 and community colleges and higher ed, and you can't do all that without some expert help. So I do appreciate the projects that you're working on. And do you anticipate any more special projects in your near future beyond the ones you're working on?
Chair Walker, I'm not sure. We do a strategic planning exercise with the board each year, and then we follow that up with a series of legislative and budget or policy option package development in the spring. And so we'll have a better feel for that by the time the board makes its decisions next summer. There are a whole variety of areas that we are looking at, and if that came out of a strategic planning retreat the board held in December. A lot of those relate to reaching out to underserved populations, helping them to be successful, to attend and succeed. A lot of the focus that we have now will be about that and about making sure that students actually move through to degree. We're also probably going to have some additional work. You can see some of it kind of outlined in some of the work that Bob and Karen are doing with regard to teacher education and with regard then to the alignment with K-12 and whether I think some of those things are going to continue and continue for a while. Because, you know, the diploma requirements are sort of rolling out over the course of the next 6 years, and the impact on us and then our impact in terms of teacher education, it all has to kind of fit together. And I don't think that's going to be a six-month or 1 year or even a two-year undertaking. But we may need different skill sets at different points in the next 6 years, which is why I kind of like the special projects approach, because it lets us take advantage of expertise at the time we need it and then get different expertise at the next juncture. So that's a long way of saying, yeah, there may be some more, but I'm not exactly sure what they're all going to be.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that because you're right. The legislature has really decided that we need to invest in higher education and that alignment and trying to make it so students can be more successful and that we get more bang for our buck. And by hiring one employee who has skill sets in one particular area and at a full-time salary, you know, that doesn't work so well as what you are doing here with your special projects. So, you know, I don't object to that concept. And I think it was an opportunity for people who wanted to know more about how you utilize personnel in special projects to learn about that today. And so I appreciate that you came in and shared it with us.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. If there are no other questions, is there anyone else wanting to testify? I don't see anyone, so I will close the public hearing, and thank you very much, Mr. Chancellor, for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that is it for our committee today. Colleagues, I will see you tomorrow. This bill we have scheduled, 3600, will either go out as is or it may have an amendment or two. I would suggest if you're looking at amendments that you shop those around with folks and get some feedback because we are treading into an area that is more complicated than it appears. So I will see you all tomorrow. Have a good evening. We're adjourned.